Welcome to A Rational Take with Rachel Pishtek. Spoiler alert, I'm Rachel Pishtek, a podcast where we break down stories in entertainment, politics, and crap that you just can't believe happened, usually in Florida. This week, we'll be talking about the death of Mac Miller and how we talk about addiction and mental illness as a society. Also, Brett Kavanaugh. What the heck is going on there? And finally, how fresh is your fish? How googly eyes permanently closed down a store? All of this and more on today's episode of A Rational Take. I'm sure you're aware, almost 2 weeks ago, the world lost another creative genius, another person who was too young to leave this world, Mac Miller, who died of a drug overdose. I can't say that I was specifically a fan of Mac Miller. Not that I wasn't a fan of his music, I wasn't a close follower of his, that's how I'll say it. I didn't have anything against him, I didn't have anything against his music. I think he's a creative genius. I just didn't follow him that closely. But anytime anybody, especially if they've made such a creative impact and made such a deep impact into people's everyday lives, when they're taken away, especially at such a young age and in such an unfortunate way, it's everyone feels that loss. And so to everyone who is a fan of his, I am so sorry. And to people who are living today who have been down similar paths as Mac Miller in regards to his life, inside and outside of addiction, I am so sorry, and it must be a lot to process right now. So I hope that you are doing okay. I wanted to talk about this not only because he's somebody that's so close to my age, he was only 26 years old, but because he was a person that has had such a public background and such a public voice when it came to addiction and mental health issues. And I was listening to this interview with Tana Mojo, who you remember me talking about earlier on this podcast, not this episode, but my first for real episode, the TanaCon episode. She was the creator of TanaCon. She was the young woman behind that whole fiasco. After Mac Miller had died, Malcolm, she posted a screenshot of her conversation with him on the day of his death, and in the caption, the conversation didn't happen on the day of his death. This was a different day that she had been speaking with him, but on the day of his death, she posted a conversation with him, and in the caption talked about how in love with him she was, and how she loved him every day, and how she wanted him to kiss her one more time, and he was such a constant in her life and all this stuff. And a lot of fans of hers and a lot of fans of Mac Miller's freaked out, and they were calling her what people call in hip hop and in internet internet spaces, a clout chaser, meaning that she was trying to get in on the attention. I don't believe that necessarily. I think people process death in different ways, but people were confused because she has publicly said for the last probably 6 months that she is in a relationship with the Disney Channel actress Bella Thorne, former Disney Channel actress Bella Thorne. And Mac Miller was allegedly in a relationship with another young woman. So fans were really confused. And the night that Mac Miller died, Tana was seen on the red carpet at the Pornhub Awards making out with Trippy Redd, who is a hip-hop artist. And so people were kind of lost as to what are we supposed to believe here? You're in love with him? Where did this come from? What about Bella? What about this other guy you made out with? What is going on? And I think in terms of hip-hop and internet culture and that culture of just young people who are on the rise, I think there's a lot of free love going on, and I can't judge. I don't really understand that, but I think that's kind of the vibe. And it's always been a thing, specifically in hip hop, for artists to have more than one significant other at a time, I guess you could say. And so in this, there's an interview, like I was saying before, with Tana on a podcast called No Jumper with Adam 22, and I love Adam 22 so much. if you are okay with vulgarity and you really like hip-hop media and you really like knowing the artists behind the music, I would highly recommend you listen to No Jumper. And you can also watch it on YouTube, the interviews on YouTube. I personally watch them on YouTube because I think Adam 22 is so yummy. He's so handsome. He's just like this giant man covered in tattoos from his head to his toes. He's just gorge. Anyway, that's beside the point. Tana said that she kind of engaged with him in relations, but I don't think that they were in a serious relationship. She said there was no sort of affair going on. I think that they just kind of were woven into each other's lives, and it's clear how he made an impact on her, and I think she made an impact on him as well. But Tana said, she directly said that Mac was sober and at the top of his game, ready to go out on tour. And she wanted to post this screenshot because she was sick of the media painting him in a certain light as a depressed addict, and she wanted to humanize him by showing, you know, this is a real person, these are the conversations that we're having. And that was really interesting to me. Obviously, none of us know what headspace that Mac Miller was in when he died. It just got me to think, where does our mind go when we hear someone has overdosed? When we think of hip hop culture, we think of drugs and alcohol, and there are a lot of people within hip hop and within music and in the entertainment industry in general who are used to partying as a way of coping with issues they have going on in their businesses, in their personal lives. A lot of times people, especially in hip hop, their talent is discovered and they're automatically pulled out of these complex situations where they were either living in the streets, on the streets, you know, living in these crazy situations. They're pulled out of it and then they're given this life of luxury and they don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to deal with their family members that are asking for money here, there, the other thing, and drugs and alcohol are a way for them to cope. Or they have a history of abuse in their family and drugs and alcohol have been a way for them to deal with it for years and years and years. And this is in all areas of the entertainment industry. I'm not just saying hip hop. So I think, and Adam 22 made a comment about it, a lot of times when these overdoses happen, especially in hip hop, they happen to people who are used to that constant everyday partying, everyday using lean and everyday smoking, everyday pills, blah, blah, blah. They get out of it, they're clean and sober, and then on a whim, they're at a party or they're wanting to get back where they used to be, and then they just do a little bit too much. And from what Tana and Adam 22 are saying, that's what they kind of made it sound like. And I do not want to be disrespectful when it comes to his death. I take addiction extremely seriously. I worked in prevention for the first 3 years of my career. I'm not saying this is gospel truth at all, but it just really interested me, their conversation about how do we think of a person when they die of an overdose? How do we picture them in our heads? And another thing that was really interesting about this death was there was extreme backlash against Ariana Grande, who dated Mac for many years. They were engaged at one point, I believe. They were a very public couple. And a lot of people were saying, oh, she left him at his darkest time. How could she do that? Blah, blah, blah. And I just want to say to that, sometimes people need to figure things out for themselves. It is never, if you have someone in your life that is an addict, you know that sometimes no matter what you do, you'll never be enough for them. You cannot take away somebody else's chemical dependency issue. That is not on you as an outsider. I don't care if you're madly in love. I don't care if you halfway know the person and you are casual acquaintances and you just feel bad. There's no relationship that will make somebody whose life revolves around chemicals change unless they decide to change it themselves. And there's a difference between being a supportive friend or a partner or family member and being an enabler. And I found this really great article on the Huffington Post, which I will share in the description. And I'm going to start trying to remember to do that, share the names of the articles in the description of the podcast. You would think that somebody who's talking about specific articles would do that. This article talks about the story of a woman named Dori Olds who started battling addiction at the age of 13, which is just heartbreaking. And I know that when I was in high school, there's a certain statistic that I saw. Don't quote me on this because I don't remember it, and it's pretty old by now because I was in high school 7 years ago when I graduated. That most alcoholics become addicted to alcohol by the age of 15, which is an insane thing to think about and really heartbreaking. Anyway, so Dori started battling addiction. She dealt with alcoholism. She abused cocaine. She was carrying on with her life. She couldn't maintain jobs. She couldn't maintain relationships or friendships or relationships with her family. And when she was 26 years old, her roommate stopped her and said to her, "I'm not going to watch you kill yourself. If you don't get a hold of yourself, I'm leaving." And I think that is a tough thing to say to somebody. I hope that none of you have ever had to do that to somebody, because it sucks. It really, really sucks. Research consistently shows, though, that support from friends in regards to positive sober behavior, you know, like enabling a person to continue to exercise, eat healthy, engage in things that you know that they are good at when they're living their sober lives, and also giving them tough love can motivate addicts to seek treatment. And in this article, after telling the story about Dori, the author speaks to Sal Reichbach, who is a psychologist, and Dr. Reichbach gives some advice and some information on how, as a friend, you can support without enabling people in your life that you think might have chemical dependency issues. And the first thing is, as a friend, it's important to have a non-judgmental conversation with them about how their substance abuse is making you feel and how it's affecting your relationship. This is tough. It's really tough because a lot of times people don't want to hear that. And it's not always in regard to substance abuse. It's a really awkward and difficult conversation that needs to be had. So that's the first step. The second step is, do not enable them. And this one, especially where I live, can be really challenging. It's kind of like, what else is there to do if I'm not out with my friends at the bar? And it's really challenging because I feel like if you don't invite people to go out to the bar with you, or you decide to not go to the bar, or you decide to do something else, they might feel offended. But you have to think about what's more important, the person's life and their dignity or their feelings. So it's a really tough pill to swallow, but you cannot expect to see them have success in their recovery by going out with them to the bar or having drinks with them or, you know, engaging in other ways with them. Another thing to consider, according to Dr. Reichbach, is an intervention, which to me sounds terrifying, but in some cases might be the best way for you to communicate with this person in your life. This meaning including a few other close friends and family and having everybody use I statements, so to speak. This is how I feel about the way that you've been at behaving, or this is how I feel alcohol is affecting our relationship, or whatever the issue is. Including close friends and family, remaining calm, and letting that person know. I would not suggest doing this, and I am not an expert, obviously. I would not suggest doing this until after you have a conversation with them one-on-one, using the same type of language. The worst thing I think you could do is just include, all of your friends and family, all of these friends, the whole neighborhood, and bounce on them. This intervention is plan B or C. Next, consider tough love. And this is something that I thoroughly stand by because I don't think people realize the depth of a situation until they've encountered tough love in their lives based around the behavior that they're engaging in. So for me, I just think that your actions speak louder than your words. And you can tell somebody, inflate somebody's ego for so long, tell them that how great they are at this, that, or the other thing for their whole life. But if they're not changing their behavior based on your positive affirmations, then are you actually doing anything to help them? And it's really tough to, I mean, it's called tough love for a reason. It's really hard to cut somebody out of your life. And I wouldn't say cut. I actually, speaking of last week, my obsession with Real Housewives, I was watching an episode of Real Housewives the other day, and somebody said something to the effect of, I'm not ending the friendship, I'm putting a comma there. And I think that's how this tough love kind of operates. You're not ending the friendship, you're not ending the relationship, you're just putting in a comma. Because after that, Dr. Reichbach says, you need to take care of yourself and you need to have boundaries. It is not on you, it is not up to you to be their superhero. It's up to you to be there supportive to them and let them know how you feel and let them know what you think is best for them, but make sure to take care of yourself first, because if there are two of you that are in the hole, no one's getting out of the well. And then finally, once the friend has made the choice to enter treatment, doing constructive activities with that person that are away from substances or behaviors that are harmful to them is extremely helpful. Go to a movie, go for a walk, cook together. You can think of things to do. I'm not you. You can think of things to do with them. So to wrap this whole story up, it's really unfortunate that Mac Miller died. Nobody really knows what was going on in his life. This could have just been a freak accident. This could have been a pattern. Nobody knows. If you have people in your life that you know struggle with substance abuse, please make sure to reach out to them at any point in your life. And if there gets to be a point where your behavior and your actions and your words aren't doing anything, do not be afraid or sad or scared that something you did made them choose to do something harmful. That's not the case at all. People have free will. Be there as a friend, show your love through your actions, but don't feel like everything falls upon you. So this Brett Kavanaugh situation, huh? What a mess. What a mess. Just a quick little cliff notes at the beginning if you're unaware of what's going on. I don't think anybody knows exactly what's going on except for the people that are in charge of reviewing all of the accounts. And even them, I don't think they have any idea what's going on. Brett Kavanaugh was selected to be put in former Justice Kennedy's position on the Supreme Court, and now there are these accusations coming out against him saying that he sexually assaulted Dr. Christine Blasey Ford in the 1980s when he was inebriated, which it shouldn't matter, and I'm going to touch on that later. Don't you worry your pretty little head. When he was inebriated at a party in the 1980s, when he was far younger than whatever age he is now. Again, don't worry, I'll get there. At a social event. And now there are these hearings that need to be going on to make sure if he is truly at the moral standard that we feel the Supreme Court justices should be held to when nominated to the Supreme Court. That's going to be a no for me, that he's, that this is acceptable. And I would say this about anyone. If there's any sort of tiny, little, minuscule accusation made against you in any regard, but especially where you committed an actual crime, you don't get to be, just because it went unreported, just because it went under the rug, just because there were no actual criminal charges filed against you, homie, you don't get to be on the Supreme Court. You do not get to have that title. I am sorry. You can be the most liberal, hippy-dippy, or the most straight-laced conservative person in the world, and you can be on the Supreme Court if your record is completely clean. No one has boo to say against you unless it's just a difference in opinion. But if you committed an actual crime, or if someone is going up against you saying you physically assaulted them, harmed their body, their physical space, body, made them feel unsafe, Supreme Court, no. Not even the People's Court. Not even divorce court, okay? You can't even be a TV judge. You need to go home and rest and find some other job away from other human beings. Heck no, Brett Kavanaugh. Okay, I'm getting a little heated. This is something that's very important to me. Okay, so getting back to the story, Mitch McConnell accused Democrats of withholding these accusations until the last minute as a political move. So he was accusing the Democrats of holding this so that at the last minute they could use this to get Kavanaugh out and another person in, because he believes that they're trying to get somebody more liberal into this seat, which, yes, they would ideally like for somebody more liberal to be in this seat. That's how politics work. But what really seemed to happen is that Senator Feinstein, who is the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, was waiting for Dr. Blasey's permission to release the records and release the testimony, which didn't happen up until this point. And so now it's just up to Brett Kavanaugh to explain himself in front of the committee. And before we move on to the next part of this story, what we can take away from this right now, language like Mitch McConnell's, and it happens in both parties, every industry, all the time, both men and women, is damaging to survivors of assault and abuse, period. Sexual, emotional, physical. Never, ever question anybody that is coming up to you and telling you their testimony about any sort of abuse. No one, especially when it's up against a man of immense power, like we've learned in the Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby, Les Moonves this last week. No one is trying to be, in the last story, like I said, a clout chaser. That is the most traumatic thing that can ever happen to a human being. Look at what happened when, if you're not familiar, Terry Crews, big, strong man, oftentimes in comedies and action movies, literally his pecs like can bounce basketballs. He came out and said that he felt sexually harassed by a male in Hollywood, and he became an absolute laughingstock. It happens to men and women all the time. No one is excited to share these stories and share these experiences because they're humiliating and they are debilitating and they are life ruining. Trust me. So it's not fair for us to question, you know, somebody's story of abuse or assault. And don't ever, ever say, well, he was drunk, he didn't know what he was doing. Not an excuse. Oh, if you can't get over that when you're drunk, if somebody touches you when you're drunk, you just have to keep in mind, I've heard people say that before. Not to me. To me, yes, but not in regard to me or about me, but in regard to other people. People that I have called friends have said that before. Or if you say anything like, well, what were they wearing? Or was she really drunk? Your sobriety doesn't matter. Your appearance, what you're wearing, nothing matters. It's all about power and control. And it is up to us as a society to listen and not question when somebody is speaking their truth about these types of accusations. And not only that, if it's a really high up person in entertainment, it's a really high up person in the government in this case, that's terrible. But when it's in the workplace as well, or if it's a nobody, if it is a nobody that works at, I don't know, insert fast food chain. Not that people who work at fast food chains are nobodies, but you know what I mean. In comparison to a Les Moonves or in comparison to a Brett Kavanaugh, it doesn't matter. It's still a horrible thing. And you do not get to be at the top, at the forefront of American government and have some sort of accusation like this against you. Zero, bye. Go home, homie. Go home. Anyway, saying things like, well, why didn't you say this right away? Makes people withdraw, and our tendencies as human beings is automatically not to believe them. It's not okay. Do not do that. So a conservative advocacy group is currently planning on spending $1.5 million on ads to defend Brett Kavanaugh's reputation. And in response to that, those against Kavanaugh have taken to Twitter with hashtag Believe Christine. Now, both of these actions give me a headache for similar reasons, because they're targeting, they should be flipped, okay? I mean, I think Brett Kavanaugh should not even be considered. You could, like I said, it doesn't matter, his politics aside, anybody with these types of accusations, you should not even be considered. How are you going to fairly rule against a certain policy or a certain case when you can't even control yourself and your own inhibitions? Beside the point, they should be flipped. No octogenarian, septuagenarian, people that are senior citizens is looking on Twitter and looking at the hashtag Believe Christine. That is not going to influence them to call their senators and say, you know, we really need to hear her out. No young person, I mean, I think I am one out of probably 25 friends that I have, probably one out of 25 friends that actually has a traditional cable package. I have DirecTV. No one my age who is in the tendency to be on Twitter, hashtag Believe Christine, is going to be seeing these ads. Today, when I was walking down the street, I saw these vehicles that were wrapped in, like, full wraparounds, like ad wraparounds, like a Suburban and a different vehicle. I can't remember what the other one was. It doesn't matter. But they had full on Brett Kavanaugh, cool guy, call Heidi, who is Heidi Heitkamp, who is one of our senators in North Dakota. Tell her that this guy's chill. Okay, like, this is, no, this is not how it should work. Get him out, get a new person in, and I know why they're trying to get Brett Kavanaugh in, because he will be a puppet. And I understand that. I mean, we have puppets in the Democratic Party as well, in all three branches of government. But an accusation like this is insane. There's so many things, everybody that's listening, that have happened in this last administration that never would have flown 20, 30 years ago. And this is a glaring one. This is crazy. So Brett Kavanaugh on Monday morning put out a statement that said, I've never done anything like what the accuser describes to her or to anyone, because this never happened. And I had no idea who was making this accusation until she identified herself yesterday. Ew. Hello? It doesn't matter. Because this never happened. I had no idea. If this never happened, then why would you even include, I had no idea who was making this accusation until she identified herself yesterday? That just gets me, my blood boiling. This is not okay. This is not normal. If you're a Republican and you're listening to this and you're okay with Brett Kavanaugh being placed in this position, I understand it from a standpoint that you want a Republican on the Supreme Court to voice what you think is your moral compass. But is your moral compass aligned with somebody who has literally been accused of sexual misconduct. Where does it end? Where does it end? I do not understand how people can claim that they are supportive of family values and they're supportive of this, that, and the other thing. But then things like this, when they are being brought up, when accusations like this are being made, those just dissipate and they're trying to show the rest of the world that, oh, these accusations are false because they're coming from this liberal figurehead. What? That is not, talk about being respectful of human life. This ain't the way, sweetie. Anyway, so after dissatisfaction of senators in both parties, Republican leadership has decided to carry on with the hearing. So we'll see. Let's go, Brett. Let's see what you have to say, man. I'm really excited to see what you have to say. I'm sure it'll be terrible. Today's is pretty stupid. I mean, this story is always stupid, but there's not a lot of background to it, and there's not a lot of context, and not a lot of substance. But I found it at my favorite spot, HuffPo weird section. A store in Kuwait was shut down after people discovered they were sticking googly eyes on their fish to make them appear more fresh. And there are hilarious photos of this happening. And I just want to start doing that at my local grocery store. Not on fish to deceive people, but like oranges or cheese or milk. I think that would be really funny. But yeah, that's it. That's dumb. I'll put the link in the description. Now, for my favorite part, this bothers me. This week, this is what's bothering me. Women being put up against other women, particularly in the Cardi B versus Nicki Minaj space fight. If you don't know what happened, you're like the rest of us because nobody really has an idea of what happened. So allegedly, Nicki Minaj said something in private about Cardi B's child, not publicly, but then also liked a comment on Instagram pertaining to Cardi B's brand new baby girl. And Cardi saw Nicki at a Harper's Bazaar party during New York Fashion Week, and she went wild and out, took her shoes off, threw a shoe, took her earrings off, and Nicki remained unfazed. Afterwards, she was serving face at the party in front of this cab, which was pretty glamorous. But this is why this bothers me, okay? First of all, I don't know what happened in terms of Nicki saying anything about Cardi B. This is a multifaceted issue. I'm gonna start with number one. Cardi, why are you acting brand new? That is a quote from, indirectly, Shea Coulee. Why y'all acting brand new? You know that in this industry, and you know that in life in general, you're a 25-year-old woman. We're the same age, which is really depressing because I will never be as wealthy as she is. But we're in the same age. We're both 25. You know that women that are more mature than you and that have been more built up in the industry, you need to respect them and you need to look up to them and you need to go to them for guidance. Stop. Do not go to a party of respectable people and make a fool out of yourself. Like, I know that you're from the Bronx. You talk about it all the time. It's great. I love that. But you need to know that is not how you behave, especially at an event like this. That's number one. Number two, social media. And we need to stop putting women up against each other like our voices matter as consumers, because these types of beefs are critical to hip-hop, critical to music. This is when some of the best music is generated, when people are at odds with each other. This could be all strategic from their record labels. This could be completely strategic for the type of music that they're going to be releasing for the next year to 2 years. They could actually be fighting, but this could all be strategy. So let's not waste our time writing paragraphs on their Instagram. Nikki, you're old. Get out. You're jealous because blah, blah, blah. You can't have kids. No. Men do this all the time in the music industry. And people care, but nobody is trying to cut them in half and feed them to the world. Like, stop calling. It's really problematic calling Cardi B ghetto, because when you call somebody ghetto, oh, this just got me heated. Okay. I know so many people who have said, I don't really like Cardi B. She's ghetto. What are you implying? What emphasis are you putting behind the word ghetto? Would you call Iggy Azalea ghetto? No. Would you call Taylor Swift something in regard to her skin color? No. What do you mean by ghetto? What are you trying to say by calling somebody ghetto? You might not directly be referring to them behaving in a certain way because you are not a racist, but calling somebody ghetto is a term that we call a microaggression in regards to racism. So what do you mean when you call Cardi B ghetto? Stop calling her that, because she's not. She used to live in the P's. Now she's got a crib with a gate. If you've listened to Bodak Yellow. Stop calling Nicki Minaj old. People age. People get older. It's a fact of life. Jennifer Lopez is 50, you guys. Or 49. Or 50. Stop calling Nicki Minaj old. She can behave however she wants to because she's raking in the M's. And she is delivering us bomb music still to this day. Stop it. These beefs are so important to hip-hop, but stop using these problematic terms to describe either artist. If you don't like them, if you're not into them, just don't listen. Turn the page. Change the channel. Don't talk about it. This is important. MGK and Eminem are literally doing the exact same thing. I'm not seeing anybody saying, Eminem is old. MGK is ghetto. No. Think about what you're saying behind that. Okay, and then number three, stop attacking the fans of other people. Like, I've seen so many fan accounts being created recently on Instagram and Twitter, completely dedicated to calling out fans of either Nicki Minaj or Cardi B. Can you get a hobby, please? Get a podcast. It's easy. I'm pretty bad at it, but maybe you'd be better than me. So, stop. It's annoying. Don't be an idiot. Which takes us to, don't be an idiot. And I actually don't have anything for don't be an idiot this week. Nobody left any responses, which is unfortunate. So if you would like to have a question answered for don't be an idiot, any type of advice that you think that I might be able to give you, go to my Twitter page at Rachie Pishy, and it's a Google form that is my top pinned tweet. Go in there and write a remark. Otherwise, you can DM me, you can text me, you can message me. I'll keep it completely anonymous unless you say otherwise. Let me know. I'm happy to answer your questions. So in this time, I just kind of wanted to say that there are certain sources that I refuse to use, like CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, Breitbart, obviously. I've been sticking a lot to New York Times, Washington Post, The Economist. What other sources do you think that I should be using? Let me know. If you think that there are good middle ground sources that I can use for the podcast. But that's it. This has been A Rational Take with Rachel Pishtek. I love you. Tweet me at Rachie Pishy. All my social media is at Rachie Pishy. Please give me a 5-star review on iTunes as we gain more listenership so that it gets recommended to more people and I do a better job editing this and putting it together for you. The only way I'm going to pay attention is if you give me a rating. Just kidding. But please give me 5 stars if you're my friend and you love me. Okay, bye! Thank you.